You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow, and for the rest of the hour, one approach towards dealing with energy issues, hydrogen. And on Monday, the president of the European Commission, Romano Prodi, will unveil a plan to introduce hydrogen power into Europe's mainstream economy. Now, this plan is the first of its kind to use hydrogen as a renewable substitute for fossil fuels and natural gas. And joining me now to talk about that is Jeremy Rifkin. He's author of The Hydrogen Economy, The Creation of the Worldwide Energy Web and the Redistribution of Power on Earth. He's also the founder and president of the Foundation on Economic Trends in Washington, and he'll be delivering the keynote address at the European Union Hydrogen Conference in Brussels on the 16th and 17th of June. Welcome back to the program, Jeremy.
Thanks. It's nice to be here, Alan.
Tell us about what I know you are an advisor to Romano Prodi. What are you advising him and the rest of the EU to do about hydrogen?
Well, last March I gave Romano Prodi an abstract of my new book, and he read it, and then I prepared for him a strategic memorandum on how the European Union could make a step-by-step transition out of oil dependency into becoming the first fully integrated renewable hydrogen economy by mid-century. He and I spent some personal time on it. He gave the green light. And then in October, the European Union announced a plan to bring together the EU, all of the major businesses in Europe, and civil society to create a roadmap, an actual operational plan over the next 25 years so that the EU could become the first hydrogen superpower of the 21st century. On Monday, I'm leaving for Brussels tomorrow, on Monday and Tuesday, the actual roadmap that's been worked on for the last year will be presented. There'll be ministers from all over Europe. President Prodi will give an address. I will also give a talk on the impact this is going to have on the economy and society. Spencer Abraham, the Secretary of Energy here in the United States, will also be giving a presentation as well. So this is a real historic point in history, a major superpower actually committing itself in the long run to actually getting off hydrocarbons and moving into hydrogen.
There's been a little bit of a controversy in the last couple of days about how much money that Mr. Prodi has said he will invest in it, originally promising to spend 2 billion euros on hydrogen research, and then people in his own commission saying, no, that was wrong. And what is the amount of money that the EU is willing to spend in the next few years?
Well, it was a pretty big change in commitment. Over the last 3 or 4 years, it was about 200 million euros for sustainable development. Over the next 3 or 4, it's going to go up to 2 billion. And hydrogen will be the centerpiece for the sustainable development R&D. But that's just the beginning. The working document that's going to be released on Monday makes it clear that there has to be a much more aggressive approach to really making this transition. You know, what's interesting about what Europe's done is the reaction here in the United States. When American businesses found out that the EU was going to develop a partnership with European industry to move into this new era, American companies went to the White House and said, look, we want a partnership. We'd like a public-private strategic alliance. And, of course, then President Bush in his State of the Union address said hydrogen's the future. He said we need to get off dependency on oil and move to hydrogen. The problem is he's not walking the walk. When you actually look at the energy bill in front of the Congress that was put together by the White House, you see that their approach to hydrogen is completely different than the European Union approach. As you know, Ira, there's two ways to extract hydrogen. You can either get it from fossil fuels, coal, oil, and natural gas, or you can use renewable energy to electrolyze water and grab hydrogen from water. When you look at the bill in front of the Congress, you begin to see that hydrogen's being used by this administration as a Trojan horse to bolster the interests of the coal, nuclear, and fossil fuel industries. They've got a few billion dollars in there to create a nuclear plant to produce hydrogen and a coal power plant to produce hydrogen and a teeny little amount of money for renewable energy. So in a sense, I think that the administration, if I were cynical about it, is actually trying to hijack hydrogen, which is the future, and yoke it to an old-fashioned nuclear and fossil fuel agenda. And it does put the EU and the U.S. somewhat at odds, and I don't want to overstretch this, but the EU has to move to hydrogen for this reason. It has a target, a benchmark, that 22% of its electricity has to be renewable by 2010, and 12% of all of its energy has to be renewable by 2010. It can't get there without hydrogen, because hydrogen's the storage carrier. And this is something that I think your listening audience needs to really understand. when you generate electricity, as you know, you can't store it. It immediately flows down the line. So if you're using renewable energy like Europe wants to do, wind, solar, hydro, what happens if the wind's not blowing for a few days over Europe? Or if the sun isn't shining, or if you have drought and not enough hydro? Hydrogen's the way to store renewable energy. You generate the electricity with the wind or solar, photovoltaic, and hydro. You use some of that electricity right away for power, but the surplus electricity you use to immediately electrolyze water, grab hydrogen, then you have stored energy that can be used both for electricity and for power and transport. So you really can't separate out hydrogen from a renewable future. They go together in lockstep. And so I think Europe is definite that it has to move in that direction. And I think on Monday what will be made clear at this conference is that Europe would be interested in a partnership with the United States. The U.S. government is trying to forge a partnership. But I think the EU will make it very clear that the partnership has to be based on some reciprocity, meaning the EU's focus is R&D toward a renewable energy to extract hydrogen. The U.S. focus is more toward extracting hydrogen from the old industries, fossil fuel and nuclear. And I think the European Union rightfully is going to say we want to make sure that the focus we have in mind is part of any kind of partnership.
Does the EU have an infrastructure for moving all this hydrogen around and this electricity around?
It's in step one, just like the United States and every other country, and that is in the document that's being released on Monday and Tuesday. There's going to be great discussion on how you begin to integrate all the pieces of this puzzle. This is a great change in energy regimes, and it's going to require a wholesale change in our infrastructure. The power grids, for example, have to be changed, which is one of the most interesting parts of this. You know, the great economic revolutions in history occur when two things happen. A change in the way people organize energy, and a change in the way they communicate with each other in a new energy regime. You know, for example, ancient Iraq, Sumeria, they went to agriculture. They stored the sun's energy in cereal plants. Well, that was complicated and sophisticated. It required a new communication called cuneiform or writing to manage it. Similarly, the print press went together with steam, coal, and rail and became the command and control mechanism for the first industrial revolution. The telegraph and telephone became the command and control for oil and the internal combustion engine. What's exciting about this revolution is we're about to see the very early stages of a new convergence between a great communication revolution and a new energy regime. And that is when you get your fuel cell, and you have to think 5, 10, 15, 20 years down the line, a fuel cell is analogous to a personal computer in the sense that you're generating your own power. You're generating your own content. You become the power plant. Well, when you start thinking of millions of people with fuel cells, their automobiles, their homes, their factories, their offices, creating content, then the question you ask is, what do you do with a surplus electricity? You have to send it back to the grid. That's where the new communication revolution comes in. All of the digital technology and the software and hardware that was developed to create the World Wide Web will now become the command and control mechanism to reconfigure all the power grid so you can send energy from your point, whether it's a home or office, peer-to-peer, just like information, and designate where it's going to go on the grid in real time. So when those come together, the decentralized communication revolution of the 1990s with decentralized hydrogen energy of the 21st century, that's the third industrial revolution, and I think it's going to be as impactful on the 21st century as the coming together with print, coal, and steam in the 19th century and electricity with oil and the internal combustion engine in the 20th. It's a big, disruptive revolutionary change and will not happen overnight, but the EU is at least determined to begin those first steps so that by 2050 that kind of regime's in place.
And why don't you think we're doing that in this country on that level?
I think that President Bush is so yoked to the fossil fuel and nuclear interest to begin with that he wants to bring us into a hydrogen future, but he doesn't want to leave the fossil fuel and nuclear past. So in a sense, he's trying to capture hydrogen for the old interests, and you can see it in the energy bill. You know, a couple billion to extract nuclear experimentally from nuclear or coal or gas or oil, very little money into renewable energy. I think that's where his administration, the way they think and how they approach it. The sad part is that if they continue along this line and actually create an R&D program and an infrastructure based on extracting hydrogen from the old industries, the United States could well be a secondary power by mid-century because really the future is moving toward renewables. The real problem in the short run is cost. That's the key problem. It's expensive generating hydrogen with renewable energy. But what the EU, I think, understands is there's two bell curves here. The cost of oil and gas are going to go up in the next 20, 30 years as we head toward global peak in oil production. Meanwhile, the cost of renewable energies, Moore's Law has set in. We're doubling the knowledge base and halving the cost every 18 months, similar to software in the biotech revolution. Economies of scale will mean that these new technologies for extracting hydrogen will be cheaper. And the fuel cell is 2.5 times more efficient than the internal combustion engine. So there's really two curves. Oil and gas will continue to go up on world markets. The cost of renewable technologies to extract hydrogen from water are going to go down. And when the two curves start to approach each other, then we're going to start to see a dramatic acceleration into the new energy regime, but only if government is engaged with the private sector to do it. There's no way to do it without some kind of public-private partnership.
Talking with Jeremy Rifkin about the future of hydrogen power on Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. So what are the first steps that that the EU is going to be taking? I mean, can you give us a roadmap of where you see from 50 years up to 50 years from now?
The roadmap now that's going to be released on Monday and Tuesday, step one is the R&D plan. And this is most of step one, and that is how to allocate the funds within the EU to creating the most strategic leveraging to move the technology. And the most interest, of course, is renewables. What President Prodi is going to say on Monday is their game plan is to heavily underwrite renewable-based technologies to get to a hydrogen future. There's some politics here. As you know, the EU has signed on to the Kyoto Accords. The United States has not. The EU has no choice but to go to renewables and hydrogen, or it can't make its targets under the Kyoto Accords. So what's going to be center to this roadmap is really pumping up the possibilities of working with industry to move renewables, leveraging with the financial community, developing kind of a NASA approach where all the major research engines, public, private, and academic, work together to really begin to make this a concerted journey and not disparate. The U.S. approach is still kind of market-directed with very little government a partnership, so we're going in a lot of different directions, and I think it's not as efficient as the way the EU is going to approach it.
Mm-hmm. And some, I got about a minute left, and step two, three gets us where?
Well, step two and three is encouraging the investment community and the business community to begin to understand the tremendous potential this has for rejuvenating the European economy and the global economy. The great changes in economies really happen when you change your energy regimes, because then you're talking about a multiplier effect. You're talking about new jobs to create the new infrastructure. Mm-hmm. You're talking about financing new goods and services that will come with the new energy regime. So I think step two is to put more emphasis after the R&D into how to leverage partnerships with the investment and business community to make sure that all the money is there to make it happen. Step three is to involve the civil society intimately in the project. This truly could be power to the people. This really is decentralized energy, but that doesn't mean it's going to happen. To ensure it happens, the NGOs in Europe and civil society organizations are going to have to be an intimate part of the partnership with government and industry to make sure that the power is really democratic and really flows horizontally and not vertically under the control of big companies.
All right. We've run out of time. Jeremy Rifkin, thank you for joining us. Jeremy Rifkin is author of The Hydrogen Economy, The Creation of the Worldwide Energy Web, and The Redistribution of Power on Earth. And he's also founder and president of the Foundation on Economic Trends in Washington. Also, earlier I spoke with Daniel M. Kamen and Stephen A. Dell. Our program is produced by Annette Heist and senior producer Karen Verghoff. Charles Berquist is our director. Our interns are Erica Holland and Annalise Strachan. And if you'd like to write us, over to our website. Go to our sciencefriday.com website. If you missed any of the links we talk about, the subjects, we have Science Friday's Kids Connection there, which are free curricula based on Science Friday. Also, you can get back editions of Science Friday. Listen to them on your audible.com player or download the streaming on Real Audio. And also, you can send us email there if you want to send us email that way, or send us email the old-fashioned classic way to Talk of the Nation Science Friday, 1221 6th Avenue, 37th floor, New York, New York, 10020. I'm Ira Flatow in New York.